Now, from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All righty, boys and girls, happy Friday. Headlines right here on Softy and Dick are brought to you, of course, by our friends, as if you expected somebody different at VenueKings.com. Okay.
You looking for tickets?
I'm good. How are you, by the way?
I'm great.
You looking for tickets for the next Kraken home game against Arizona? VenueKings.com can set you up. Be sure and use code Softy at checkout for a little bit of a discount. Okay, the Seahawks, according to numerous reports, are hiring Ed Donatell for a defensive assistant position and are set to promote defensive line coach Clint Hurt to defensive coordinator. Hugh Millen will join us, by the way, at 5 o'clock to talk about all of that.
Speaking of joining us, we are a half hour away from the head coach of the Red Hot Doggies joining us. That would be Mike Hopkins. Dogs now 7-3 on the Pac-12 season after their most convincing win of the year, beating Cal in Berkeley. Jamal Bay led the Dogs with 20. Largest road win for the UW since 2014.
Wow, that is crazy. That's 8 years ago, Dick. Let's see. Sounders extending three contracts today through 2024. Raul Ruiz Diaz, João Paulo, and Javier Arriaga all sticking around for at least three more years with the club.
Want a Woj bomb?
Absolutely.
All right. Norman Powell, who is actually averaging 19 points a game for the Blazers, has been sent to the Clippers along with Robert Covington for Eric Bledsoe, Justice Winslow, and Keon Johnson.
And baseball spring training is set to start in 10 days from now. I would say good luck with that. The baseball owner is requesting that a federal mediator get involved to break the stalemate in the labor negotiations with the players. The MLBPA today said, yeah, we're not going to go for that.
And here we go.
Here we go. Ready? Go.
It's Football Friday, NFL Playoff Edition.
We got to have it now. We got to have it now.
Powered by Bud Light, proud partner of the Seattle Seahawks.
You're getting high now. You're getting high. You're too high, baby.
On your home for the NFL and Super Bowl 56, Sports Radio 950.
Let's go get it.
KJR.
All right, baby. Here we go. The penultimate Friday before the Friday before the Super Bowl. Does that make sense to you, by the way? Did I get all that right?
Falling, I think. Yeah.
Well, we got one more Friday left this Friday, and then we got the Super Bowl, and then it's football finito until 2022. So get your football. You know what? That'd be a lie. Because we have the XFL or the USFL, whatever the hell it is. I can't even keep track of all these leagues. Every couple of years, somebody thinks they can be the one to jumpstart some kind of off-season football league. And in the end, they all go the same way, right down the toilet, and nobody gives a damn. So are you kind of melancholy sitting here 9 days away from the Super Bowl, knowing that we've got really 9 days to go until the final football game of the year, until September of 2022?
Well, not really, because really, for the last, I don't know, 5, maybe 10 years, the NFL has become just as interesting in March and April, particularly March and April, than it is in even September or October, because there's
just
so many.
Just as interesting, interesting.
Because there's so many uncertainties going into March, and you know so much about your football, so much more about your football team at the end of April than you do on March the 1st. And really, when you look at September and October, do you really know a lot more about your team? I mean, yeah, sometimes you do. Sometimes you think your team's going to suck, like the Bengals, and all of a sudden they're leading their division by the end of October. But a lot of times you kind of think your team's going to do something, and by the end of October, it pretty much does exactly what you thought it was going to do.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would never put the off-season stuff up against actual games. I mean, I get your point that, you know, there's a lot of good stuff going on, you know, over the off-season with the draft and free agency and all the crazy questions and the drama. I mean, think about the drama we're going to have with Aaron Rodgers, the drama we're going to have with Deshaun Watson. What is his future going to look like? There might be some drama with Russell Wilson. You never know on that front, obviously. So it's a never-ending story, man, with this NFL machine. It's unbelievable, even in times where you would think, like, there's this old adage that, you know, all pub is good pub, right? Which I generally, for the most part, agree with, unless the publicity is that you're about to go to prison for the rest of your life, right? I mean, that's not a good thing. But even the Brian Flores thing and, you know, all the controversy and the you know, racism claims behind that, it's got people engaged. It has people talking NFL football. People that aren't even really NFL football fans are taking part, Dick, in this conversation because of the racial element involved, because of the societal, because of the political, in some ways, element involved with what Brian Flores is talking about. This is not just a story that is being talked about on ESPN News or ESPN Plus. This is all over the place on ABC and CBS and CNN and Fox News. So it's just another example. It's unbelievable how this freaking league is king. And then today we get the word from Adam Jude and Bob Condotta from the Times, and now everybody around football is confirming it, doing the right thing, giving those two knuckleheads the credit that they deserve. By the way, is it kind of weird how both of them now work in tandem, right? There's no just Bob Condotta reporting this or Adam Jude reporting that. Both of them now, I think, are kind of maybe like putting in 20 hours a week. They spend half their week in Maui or Palm Springs.
That's
or,
what we should know, do then.
Whatever. So when they do something, they just do it together. It's Adam Jude and Bob Condotta, never Adam Jude or Bob Condotta. And they both were the first to report that they're set to hire Ed Donatell for some kind of defensive assistant position. The assumption is that he's going to be involved with the passing game somehow, some way, because that's his forte with secondary play. And then they're set to promote defensive line coach Clint Hurt to be their defensive coordinator. I mean, look, no surprise. This has been one of the possibilities that's been kicked around forever, but I'm more kind of curious to know from you, and I'm sure Jackson is as well, because if I remember correctly, your take on the Ken Norton Jr. situation, and you corrected us the day he was fired. You told us on the air, I like Ken Norton Jr., but I'm a fan of letting him go if we can do better than Ken Norton Jr. If
that's
we can
exactly
bring in Fangio or Brian Flores or whatever, and it doesn't seem like they're doing that. They're promoting Clint Hurt as their defensive line coach to be the defensive coordinator. They're bringing in a guy in Ed Donatell, who has been the defensive coordinator for the Broncos the past 3 years, but Vic Fangio was the one calling the defense down there with Denver. Maybe we'll see if Sean Desai ends up here, but I don't know. Sean Desai strikes me as the kind of guy that could get an actual coordinator job somewhere, not a position coach job in Seattle. So, I mean, I don't want to speak for you, but my early impressions on this are kind of, I'm kind of underwhelmed by it, to be honest with you.
It reeks to me like, when KJ Wright kind of intimated when we asked him flat out, why was Ken Norton fired? And what was his comment? He said, somebody's got to take the fall.
Right.
So it kind of reeks to me of change for change's sake, maybe even coming from above Pete Carroll. Right?
From who?
There's
Bert
only
Cold?
One person ahead of Pete Carroll,
from
and that's
Jody
and
Allen?
That's the owner. What are you going to do to change what happened last year? And I think they felt like they had to do something.
Yeah.
Even though I feel like the offense was a bigger problem in their overall record than the defense was, and I preached that all damn year, and they were going to finish 6th in the NFL if Russell Wilson doesn't fumble the ball on his own 1 yard line in the last game of the season and give up that extra 7 points. That extra 7 points takes you from 11th to 6th in points allowed in the NFL last year. And you're going from Ken Norton Jr. to Clint Hurt. Love Clint Hurt. We've talked to him numerous times. Great dude. How is he an upgrade?
Well, I don't have any problem making a change on defense. You know me, you and I were not on the same page with the defense last year. I thought they were worse than what you portrayed, but I understand it. I mean, the bottom line is this, that technically the Seahawks have now fired 2 years in a row an offensive coordinator who had a top 10 scoring offense and a defensive coordinator who had a top 11 scoring defense, and they fired both those guys in back-to-back years. I don't know how many teams in the NFL have even done that. I mean, honestly, I don't really want to do the legwork or have the time to do the legwork or even give a damn enough to do the legwork, but a guy like Hugh Millen, who sits around looking at numbers all day like he's living in the frickin' Matrix, he might have kind of time to pull off something like that. It might be unprecedented to make moves like that when your defenses are statistically ranked as high as they were and your offense was ranked statistically as high as it was in scoring offense. So, you know, all of this to me is not shocking the way this has come down, because what we were fearful of is that Pete Carroll was going to have a hard time going out there and getting an established defensive coordinator to be his guy. First of all, he doesn't hire ex-head coaches unless your name is Tom Cable. Number two, if you're an established defensive coordinator, why would you go work for a defensive-minded coach – who's got his hand in the cookie jar and just fired a guy who, as you said, was what? Almost top 10 in scoring defense in the NFL. And if not for one play, may have been seventh. I mean, we can run on the numbers and, you know, factor that in for other teams as well. But your point is well taken. They weren't awful on defense. And the guy just got fired, for crying out loud. So I don't know how attractive a gig this is for established dudes around the NFL. And I just feel like this, that, you know, I'm seeing a lot of folks on Twitter talking about, you know, hey, if you go out and you get Sean Desai and you got Ed Donatell and you got Clint Hurt and all three of them, three of those guys at one point in time were in Chicago with Vic Fangio, then boom, you've got Vic Fangio's defense. I mean, to me, that's nonsense.
Yeah, it's going to be
because you're
Carroll's
missing
defense.
Vic Fangio.
Yes.
He's not here. That's like hiring Chris Richard, Ken Norton Jr., and Michael Barrow and saying you got Pete Carroll's defense. Well, no, you don't, because you don't have Pete Carroll. So they're missing that one big, huge piece. So, look, I obviously we have no choice as Hawk fans but to let this whole thing play out, and we'll see if there's a third piece coming, Dick. You and I both agree that Sean Desai, you know, reeks of a guy that should be able to get a DC job somewhere, but if he doesn't and he shows up in Seattle as maybe a co-DC with Clint Hurt or maybe a position coach on the staff, all I want out of this staff is upgrades. All I want from this staff is for other teams to covet the guys on that defensive staff that one day could potentially become head coaches. So that's what I'm looking for. I think a guy like Desai potentially could do that and upgrade things. Ed Donatell, I got to be totally honest with you, man. Ed Donatell, if you want to talk about Vic Fangio, everything that Ed Donatell has done from a successful perspective, he for the most part has done with Vic Fangio as his defensive coordinator or as head coach. The secondary that he put together in San Francisco, he had Vic Fangio as his defensive coordinator. The job he did in Denver the last couple years, he had Vic Fangio as his head coach. So I don't know how much Ed Donatell on his own brings to the table. I do find it a little funny that Ed Donatell has been around the NFL for 32 years except for one season, and that was in 2008 when he was the defensive coordinator of a winless Husky football team. So, I don't know, dude. This whole thing just kind of reeks of meh, to be totally honest.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess if you have Ken Norton Jr. on one hand,
right,
and you have Desai slash Hurt slash Donatell on the other hand, I guess you could convince me that's an upgrade. Is it a significant upgrade? Yeah. I'm not so sure. Now, I'm not saying, and I've never been saying that defense was perfect last year. There are two major, major issues with how that defense has been coached the last two seasons. The one main issue is you have got to stop getting shredded in September.
Right.
I mean, I have got to stop reading at the end of September that the Seahawks are on pace for the most yards allowed in the history of the NFL.
Right.
I've got to stop seeing that. And that's been 2 years in a row that we've seen that. And then they've figured out, well, hey, great job. You figured it out. But you also lost games in September because your defense was awful. And then secondly, how to use Jamal Adams. If you can give me a September that works and a Jamal Adams that works, I don't care if your name's Mickey Mouse. I'm happy that you're the defensive coordinator with Seahawks.
I would add to that. I mean, you're right about the hole that they're in the early part of the year. You know, it really kind of mirrors what they've been doing come playoff time when they do make the playoffs and falling into these gigantic holes that they just can't get out of. And that really has been a problem in the regular season. And the Jamal Adams thing, you're right, is exactly, you know, one thing that should be on the list. But to me, if Pete Carroll is going to be the head coach of this football team, what he needs out of this defense is to get back to doing what he was asking them to do when he first showed up here, which is get the damn football back. And they're not doing that. They're not getting after quarterbacks. They're not getting the ball. They were 24th in picks a year ago. They were 24th in forced fumbles, 23rd in sacks. They need to cause more havoc on the defensive side of the ball. And look, obviously comparing everything to 2013 is a little bit ridiculous and fruitless because we'll never see it again as long as we live. We will never in our lifetime, I don't think, see a Seahawks defense lead the NFL in scoring defense 4 years in a row or have that kind of talent.
We might not see a team lead the NFL in scoring defense 4 years in a row.
I think about walking through that locker room in 2013 and just thinking, man, there is a buttload of talent in this room, and we may never see that again. But for example, last year the Seahawks had one player with more than two picks, and that was Quandre Diggs. 2013, they had four. Can we kind of meet halfway? and get a couple of guys that can be factors in taking away the football? They had four players with two or more sacks a year ago, only four. And that was Puna Ford, Rasheem Green, Daryl Taylor, and Carlos Dunlap. And the only reason Dunlap was that guy is because they changed the scheme in November and December and started letting the guy get after the quarterback. It's why I put the poll on Twitter, by the way, earlier today, Dick.
Update on the poll.
Asking people the bigger problem in general terms with the Seahawks defense. Has it been X's and O's, or has it been Jimmy's and Joe's? And 54% say it's the players, and 46% say it's the scheme. I could kind of meet you halfway. I think I would vote, if I had to vote for anything, for X's and O's over Jimmy's and Joe's, mm-hmm. because we saw what Jamal Adams can do when it comes to getting after the quarterback 2 years ago when they let him go. We saw what Carlos Dunlap can do when it comes to getting after the quarterback in November and December. I frankly think that Jordan Brooks should be a bigger factor in the backfield like he was in college and he's been so far in Seattle. And we've seen other guys on this football team, you know, namely guys like Quandre Diggs that can also get after the quarterback and force interceptions and fumbles and take the football away. I think this football team, with the players that they've had, they're not an elite defense, Dick, by any stretch of the imagination, chock full of Pro Bowlers, but they should have been doing better than 24th in picks, 24th in fumbles, and 23rd in sacks, in my opinion.
I'm with you. It's a good poll because I don't automatically jump to one side quickly. I had to kind of like chew on it a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I'm with the X's and O's. I mean, look at the names on that defense and tell, I mean, they're all starting caliber guys. Look at that. You don't have a stud on the defensive line. I get it. You don't have a home wrecker on the defensive line, but yeah. Carlos Dunlap, Al Woods, Puna Ford, Rasheem Green, those guys were good football players. You have two Pro Bowl caliber linebackers. You've got two guys that should be Pro Bowl caliber safeties, and you got to find some help at corner opposite DJ Reed. There's no question about that, but that's not a lot of holes. I mean, there's a hole at pass rusher, there's a hole at corner, but that's it.
Those are pretty.
I mean, what we're saying is, you give me one corner and one pass rusher, and you could easily have a top five defense with the right scheme. That's not far away.
Yeah, but the problem is, you're talking about a upper echelon corner and an upper echelon pass rusher. Those are hard to get. I agree with you. Finding a starting cornerback. Yeah, I mean, you could start a corner for the Seahawks. I could start a defensive end. What I'm looking for is a premier left corner and a premier edge rusher. That's what I want. Kerry Hyder was a total bust for these guys last year. Carlos Dunlap, let's face facts, even with 6.5 sacks, I thought was a bust. Whether it was his fault or not, he was a bust. He didn't show up until the season was over, for God's sakes. And now his contract is up and he's 34 years old. So I have no idea what his future looks like. Daryl Taylor has to be unleashed. Alton Robinson's got to find a way to get after the quarterback. Jordan Brooks had as many TFLs as Chase Young did. And he went, number two overall, is that right, in the draft out of Ohio State? So I think they have to start by making more of the players they have here to begin with, and then they have to go out and they have to add. And the problem is, the assumption that we're making is that all these guys are going to come back, right? I mean, under your scenario there, adding the edge rusher, adding the corner, that's assuming Quandre Diggs returns. That's assuming DJ Reed returns.
Yep.
It's assuming that you might be able to re-sign Carlos Dunlap, maybe at a lesser rate because the guy's 34 years old.
Assuming Bobby Wagner returns?
Absolutely. All that stuff. And I got to tell you, Dick, you know this as well as me. The way the NFL works, that's likely not going to happen, that all those guys come back.
Yeah, I mean, it would depend on if there's a team that just really wants to go out and blow it on a guy. Like, and Quandre Diggs is probably that guy. I mean, Quandre Diggs has probably shown enough. Kind of like Shaq Griffin with Jacksonville last year. It's like they just came out and said, you know, we're just going to grab him and we don't care if we pay too much. And that's, I guess that's the luxury you have when you're a terrible, terrible franchise and you had $75 million worth of cap room. Yep. So you just decided to spend $100 on something that was worth $60. And that's what the Jaguars decided to do. And the Seahawks will never do that, and they never should do that. But for a guy like Quandre Diggs, who I think is a much better safety than Shaq Griffin was a cornerback, maybe you got to overpay a little bit to keep a Pro Bowl-level guy.
But, God, that just doesn't seem like their M.O. at all. At all.
Well, with Pro Bowl-level guys, they've given
anybody.
Yeah, but the Pro Bowl-level guys, they have found a way. If they feel like they're their core guys, they've always given them the contract.
Right, but that's not overpaying. That's them meeting their threshold, right? Mm-hmm. They will. The Seahawks, I think, what they've established rather clearly since they've been here, they're not going to allow the market to set the rate for anybody.
Right.
They're not going to allow Jacksonville or Cleveland or Pittsburgh or the Dolphins or the Lions for Golden Tate or Philadelphia or anybody to dictate to them. They'll be damned before they allow somebody else to dictate to them how much money they'll spend on somebody.
Here's what I don't understand. You have two safeties.
Yeah.
One of them you decided to give the contract to before he proved he was worth it. And the other guy you let go to free agency when you knew he was a damn good player at the end of 2020.
I think with Jamal Adams, they just thought the longer they wait, the more it's going to cost. And they made a mistake, obviously. Ugh. Because if they waited on Jamal Adams, I don't think the guy gets re-signed. I mean, you think about the offseason now with all the drama we're going to have with guys like Rashad Penny and DJ Reed and Quandre Diggs and maybe DK Metcalf and Russell Wilson and blah, blah, blah. Add the crap storm of Jamal Adams being a free agent right now after they just gave up two first-round draft picks, a third, and Bradley McDougald for the guy. And he has the kind of year he just had. There's an alternate universe. You and I were talking about alternate universes yesterday with the Seahawks and the two NFC championships and how close they were to losing those games. There's an alternate universe out there, Richard, where the Seahawks don't extend Adams, and he's a free agent in 3 months from now, and we don't know what to do because you gave up two firsts for him, a third, and a pretty decent player. You could franchise him. Or you could let him walk, but if you let him walk, then you're blowing all those picks. You're talking about maybe getting a comp pick back for the guy. So it's crazy. I mean, they have a lot of work to do to get back to where they need to be. Now, the good news is Brady's out of the NFC. Maybe Rodgers will follow him when it's all said and done. Who knows about that guy's future? Rams could be kind of a one-and-done shot here with the way their salary may look for next season. So we'll revisit this all day long. Curious at 49451, your thoughts on Clint Hurt getting the D.C. job with Ed Donatell joining him as a position coach. Thumbs up or thumbs down? You like it, you don't like it, you want to wait on it, whatever. 49451, speaking of red hot, Mike Hopkins on the Husky basketball team. I told Ian Dick that we've been waiting for the right time to put Hopkins on the air. Winning 6 out of 7.
Ding, ding, ding.
Feels like the right damn time. He'll join us next on 950 KJR.
Now back to Football Friday, NFL Playoff Edition, powered by Bud Light, proud partner of the Seattle Seahawks on your home for the NFL and Super Bowl 56. Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Now Shepard loses the ball. It's picked up by Brown, ahead to P.J. Fuller. Huskies being wise with the basketball. Fuller left corner three. Yes, sir! A 10-3-pointer tonight for the Dogs on 16 tries. Washington is blowing this one open in Berkeley at 61-38.
Well, you know what? We've been sitting here, Dick, and that is the voice, as you know, of Tony Castricone, the leader of the free Husky radio world. You heard that right here on 950 KJR last night. We got UW-Stanford as well on Sunday, tip-off at 1 o'clock, pregame 12:30. Somebody asked me the other day, say, hey, where's Mike Hopkins? He likes to talk to you guys. You guys like having him on? And
Absolutely.
We said, you know what? Let's get some positive vibes going here because you start off 5-6. You had a bunch of games postponed due to COVID. You don't even play for what feels like a month, for crying out loud. Now they come back and they've won 7 of their last 9 games. So really the reward for Mike Hopkins is not the win column.
No.
It's getting to come on this damn radio
show. What's better than that?
And talk to you and me. So here he is. Congratulations on your gift.
Coach.
How are you?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'm glad to be on today.
Well, it's good to have you back on the show. And let's just get right to it, man. You start off 5-6, and now you're 7-2, your last 9. What happened?
You know, crazy year. New guys, just gelling, trying to get a new group to learn a new system and learn how to play together. And I knew we were going to be really good. It was just a matter of time. We were inconsistent with, you know, the first 5 or 6 games it was shooting. We couldn't make a shot, couldn't make a foul shot. And then we just kept evolving. And it's fun to watch these guys gel and play well together.
Well, yeah, Coach. And I think 4 to 6 weeks ago, we saw on offense a lot of spread, a lot of quick shots, a lot of one-on-one. And now we're seeing, God, I'm seeing horn sets. I'm seeing flex. I'm seeing fluidity. I'm seeing freedom. What do you attribute that to?
Well, you know what? Like sometimes, you know, when you play really good teams take you out of what you do. So you're, you know, every team's different. So spread might be your best option to beat a team. We've had to go small a few times. We've had to go big, but also learn to execute and learn where each player is going to get their shot. With Terrell having the ability to go and take over a game, a la Jalen Noel, the other guys have learned to play off of him, and he's learned to play with them, and they're clicking, they're sharing. And we've had more double-digit assist games this year and low turnovers than we've had since I've been here for 5 years.
So Mike Hopkins is with us, and you mentioned Terrell Brown Jr., who has been, I mean, look, we thought he'd be good. I never thought he'd be this good. I never thought he'd fill the bucket up the way he is for you, so I'm very, very pleased at that. But you're still looking for another option, right, on any given night. And Jamal had 20 last night. Yeah, we know that Dejon can do it. Emmett Matthews can do it. Do you feel like you do have a consistent second option behind TBJ?
Well, you know, Emmett Matthews was the most consistent guy in terms of double-digit scoring the last five games up until last night. We knew what Jamal Bey could do. It was just a matter of time. Dejon Davis, he's been impacting the game in so many ways. Last night he was scoring, and if you keep shooting like that, we're going to be a tough team to beat. But the thing I'm most impressed about is just the ability of now Cole Badgema coming in and being a confident player that could impact maybe making one, two, or three threes to change the game. P.J. Fuller has had a couple daggers in the game. So we're getting great, output from our bench, too. And then most importantly, Sophie, if you look at our defensive numbers in the last games, we're defending.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of the year, it was like, can we stop playing zone and play man? And now they're saying, Coach, can we play more zone? So the belief in the system has been a lot better. They're starting to feel comfortable in it. Our disruption has been high level, and it can only get better.
How do you build on that offensive game that Dejon had last night? What type of conversation do you have with him just to keep that confidence that was obviously there flowing into Stanford?
I think it's, you know, he just is feeling comfortable with what we want from him and when he, you know, is feels comfortable in what shots. And we've given these guys, you know, we've given them structure, but we've also given them confidence with the freedom that we allow them to play with. And, you know, Dejon was out for most of the preseason, or I say preseason this summer with our team. And, you know, he's a guy that we just knew the sky was the limit. And I believe he could end up being the defensive player of the year in our conference. And then watching him make those shots last night and the way that he was playing the point guard position.
Yeah.
You know, when you have two guards of the caliber of him and Terrell, you got a fifth year and a sixth year. They've already scored over 1,000 points. They've had whatever how many steals. And they're dependable. And that's one of the main reasons why we're winning.
All right. Mike Hopkins with us. And, Mike, let me kind of put this into just kind of everyday fan terms. If your name wasn't Mike Hopkins and your name was Bob Jackson and I was Jerry Smith and we were sitting at the bar having a beer talking Husky basketball, we'd say, hey, things are looking up for this team. They're playing well. They're starting to gel. But here's the problem. All these guys are going to walk out of here, right? I mean, TBJ is done. Dejon's done. Who knows about Emmett and Jamal Bey's future? What would you say to people that have that concern?
Well, you know what? We have got some really good young players. You see what P.J. Fuller is doing. You see Emmett Matthews. You see Cole Badgema blossoming. You see Jackson Grant. Sammy Arvidi has a high ankle sprain, so he's been out, maybe even out for the season, but a 6'8 forward wing who can really shoot the ball, who was just about to start playing. And, you know, you just got to keep developing our players. That's the most important thing. When those guys get an opportunity, they're going to be the ones coming back already knowing the defense, already knowing what to expect, having a summer under their belt, and they've had great moments themselves. So we're excited about that. Obviously, the transfer portal has been big for us. It will be big for us as the years move forward, and really excited as we move forward.
And are you okay with that, Coach, being primarily – I'm not saying that you will be primarily a transfer portal guy, but, you know, you look at the recruiting classes, they're not big in numbers at this point. So is that what Husky fans should expect, that the transfer portal is going to be kind of a year-in, year-out reloading of your roster?
Well, I think, you know, last year, obviously, we really depended on it. And – you know, when you have guys that can get, you know, from the transfer portal that have 2 and 3 years left, that could be most important. But I think you're always trying to strengthen your program and strengthen your team. But the most important thing, transfer portal, recruiting, transfer, whatever it may be, you got to get the right kids in your program.
Yeah.
We believe we have the right kids in our program. We've got a great culture. They're buying into it. We've got great kids. We've got the best GPA for a quarter that we've had since we've been here in the history of the school and men's basketball. And I think it's the sky's the limit, and really believe in the guys that we have.
Mike, you've made a lot of changes to your coaching staff the last couple of years. What is different about this staff now that you think you have now that you did not have in previous years?
Well, I felt like we needed to infuse the program with energy, and we needed it with player development. And Will Conroy is as good as it gets in all aspects, recruiting, coaching, be a great head coach one day. He is the heart and soul, I've always said, of our program. He's positive. He's got great people skills, knows how to motivate these kids and keep them positive and keep developing. I felt like Wyking Jones was a guy who I had a lot of respect for when he was at Louisville. You know, when we competed against each other, when they had won a national championship, he was great with player development. You see Nate Roberts playing as good basketball as he's played in his years here. So we love him. And then Quincy Pondexter. He didn't have any experience in coaching, but if you've ever been around Quincy, he's the salt of the earth. He's everything that you would want your son or daughter to be. And he is a great player developer, and the sky's the limit for him in the coaching profession. And what they brought is they brought an energy, a positive energy, love to be in the gym, love to connect with these kids, get them better. And I feel like that's you can start to see the effects of that right now.
Coach, you a little surprised at the makeup of the Pac-12 this year? And what I mean by that is we all figured UCLA was, you know, reloading, going to be really, really good. But we also thought we'd probably have 6-7 teams in the top 50 or 60 of the net, and we'd have really good depth. I'm looking here. There's only 5 Pac-12 teams in the top 90 right now in the net. Is that depth, surprising to you, or lack thereof?
Yeah, you know what? Every year is different. You know, last year, obviously, it was a great year. I feel, you know, this year is as strong or stronger than it was last year. I mean, we were picked, I think, 12th in the league. And there's a lot of good teams, a lot of really good coaches. Obviously, watching the Arizona-UCLA game the other day and playing Arizona, those two teams are national championship contenders.
Yep.
The league has never gotten a great net. You look at Stanford, they've got, I think, 4 or 5, quad one wins. They've had a 10th, strength of schedule rating. You look at Oregon, they've always gotten better at the end of the year. They had a lot of transfers like we did, so you're learning, you're growing. You might have some hiccups along the way, but, you know, I believe that if the committee sees that you're playing, you know, your highest level at the end and you're getting some high quality wins, which we're going to have a lot of great opportunities. You know, you never know what's going to happen. The net is just a way. It's one golf club in your bag, right? It gives you a format, but you also have to see how teams play at the end of the year. You have to see the teams, what they did through COVID. We had one game where I was the only coach on the bench looking for help. I was like, where are my guys? Right. I felt like I was in the ocean, and I had a straw up above the water going, where is everybody? And that happens to a lot of teams. We're not the only one. But there's a lot of things to take into consideration. But I believe in our league. I think our league with the top teams have a chance to win a national championship this year. And just hopefully we all end up strong.
Well, it's nice to finally change the narrative a little bit, Mike, as you know, and get some positive vibes going for the program. See some folks showing up at the arena. You know, the crowd for that Arizona game in a week or so should be solid on that, I think, Saturday afternoon over there at Heck Ed. But, you know, look, I mean, the conversation, as you know, and one thing that we appreciate about you is that you always shoot us straight when you come on the air. There's no topic that you shy away from talking about. And the biggest topic of conversation involving Husky basketball in the last year or so has been Mike Hopkins and his future. Has that been hard to hear and hard to deal with at times, those questions?
You know what, Softy? I understand the business that I'm in, and they love you when you win, and they question you when you don't. We've obviously been on a turbulent year and a half. But, you know, it's all about reestablishing who you are, what you're about, putting great energy, great kids, great people working together in your program. And you know, when you get a chance, you know, Husky basketball, I know, means a lot to you. It means a lot to the fans. It means a lot to me. The fans have been supportive. And you know, the one thing you can always rely on is the dog pack. It's incredible. And, you know, the games that we were winning at home, regardless of what the crowd, you know, in terms of it was 5,000, 4,000, 6,000, whatever it was, they were backing us. And the energy that they give us was incredible. I really think it pushed over the top. And I look at the way that we're playing now and hope to see Husky Nation and the fans come back in that building and really support us, because we have a fun team. Yep. We've got some great local kids that love this place. And I get it. But the great thing is that, you know, we're supported in the city. And we're going to do everything we can to represent the city, represent the school, represent you, and, get this thing back on track.
Mike Hopkins, hey, go get him, and don't get COVID again, okay?
It's awful, by the way. Go!
All right, man, thanks, see ya. Coach. Mike Hopkins with us. We'll get a break. Good to hear from the coach of the Dogs, and I guess the question, Dick, is are you buying it? Are you buying what Mike Hopkins is selling? Are you buying what you're seeing as more than just a blip on the radar for Washington basketball? We'll come back and get some thoughts on that. Talk more with the big news of the day regarding the Hawks, and it is big, baby, coming up on 950 KJR.
Now back to Football Friday, NFL Playoff Edition, powered by Bud Light, proud partner of the Seattle Seahawks on your home for the NFL and Super Bowl 56. Sports Radio 950, KJR.
We've obviously been on a turbulent, year and a half, but, it's all about reestablishing who you are, what you're about, putting great energy, great kids, great people working together in your program. And I look at the way that we're playing now and hope to see Husky Nation and the fans come back in that building and really support us because we have a fun team.
So Mike Hopkins with us last segment. Our question, I think, coming out of that conversation, are you buying that Husky basketball has turned a corner? I don't know. I mean, I think we have to see a lot more, right, than what we've seen so far. And, winning 7 of 9 is the best run that Washington's had from a wins and losses perspective since they started the year in 2019, 2.5 years mm-hmm. ago. So it's been a long time since UW has won 7 of 9 games. And I just get the feeling overall, Dick, from fans of this basketball team. And first of all, obviously, Jen Cohen, Mike Hopkins, everybody that over there at Washington, they want to attract more than just the hardcore basketball fan. They want to be
They got to capture
popular.
The city.
Yep. They want to have the city's heart, right? Yep. They want to be able to get the non-hardcore basketball fan and get kind of the mainstream sports fan that in the middle of February or, late January, if the Seahawks are out of it and we don't have the NBA, they're looking for something to do with their kids. It's mm-hmm. affordable. It's easy to get to. It's a nice, quaint 10,000-seat venue. Right. But to do that, you have to, you have to start motivating people. And I just get the sense that that's not going to happen until this team makes the NCAA tournament again. And I don't know if that's going to happen this year. I mean, they've got a brutal stretch of games coming up here. We were talking earlier about the net ranking for UW, and you mentioned the net ranking of the teams that they play in the next week and a half or so. They have a brutal back-to-back-to-back on February 12th to the 19th against Arizona, USC, and UCLA. So if they can find a way to play tough and maybe even, God forbid, win a couple of those games as opposed to getting clocked the way they did against Oregon last week and a half, then maybe you got something brewing here. But I just get the sense that people are really just kind of on the sideline waiting to see a lot more before they believe in this basketball team.
And that's fair. I will say that they are much improved on offense and defense over when we were talking about them in the beginning of January and December. Much improved. Offensively, there. You asked me 6 weeks ago, what are they running on offense? I said, they spread and they run a high pick and roll. That's it.
Great.
They do a lot more than that now, and it gets much more rhythm shots, and that's the reason those shots are going down. But for the people that are skeptical, here's the reason why they should be skeptical, and get your garbage pail out when I read these numbers out.
Yeah. Do I have one?
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw up you're talking about?
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Here is the net ranking of every one of Washington's wins in order. 180, 321, 96, 191, 120, 123, 141, 92, 231, 101, 123, and 141. There is not one top 90 win on their resume.
And where's Arizona, USC, and UCLA?
6 of their next 7 are in the top 90.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I mean, we're going to find out. And, I think that, look, I mean, the point is that you got a bunch of guys who aren't going to be here next year. What I'm looking for is player development, right? Like, is Jamal Bey really getting better? And last night he had 20. So maybe last night, let's just kind of be homers for a second here and let's just cross our fingers and hope that last night was a turning point for him. Is Nate Roberts really on the path that we thought he'd be on at this point in his career? Rebounds are up, but still not able to stay in games and still not dominating the glass the way we would have hoped he would do. So, I think the answer to that question is no. And again, everybody's got to start somewhere and you'll start with a bit of a heartbeat and get people back on board believing again, and then all of a sudden, boom, you go beat Stanford on Sunday, which you should beat Stanford on Sunday. Arizona State is not very good. You might be able to handle them as well. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden there, you've won 9 of 11 games,
right,
and you got an Arizona game on Saturday, February 12th, the day before the Super Bowl, at 3 o'clock in the afternoon with 10,000 people in the stands watching you guys hopefully get a signature win for Mike Hopkins. I remember what happened the last time UW basketball tried to do something like that. They played UCLA, remember that? And they got their doors blown off by like 40 points, and that was the nail in the coffin for Lorenzo Romar. So I hope that happens. I mean, this is baby steps. I hope they can get these next two and they can roll into Seattle on next Saturday, winners of 9 of 11 with Arizona, who, by the way, you can argue that this whole run kind of started in Tucson. Because you remember, late in the second half, they were in the game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the final score didn't show it. It was a Monday night. We're watching the game from the Emerald Queen. Maybe it was on that Tuesday night because the Seahawks are playing
that
night. And they were in the game. And we thought, hey, maybe there's something brewing here. And yes, ever since then, they're playing better basketball. So how about we just start by asking them to make that Arizona game in a week and a half from now matter? How's that sound?
Those should be wins up until that point. I mean, they should continue. If they just play like they've been playing the last couple weeks, save the Oregon game, I mean, that's the one anomaly of the last 3 weeks, basically, is that Oregon stinker. But, I mean, when you think about it, how much of a surprise should it be that the Huskies are 7-3 in the conference?
When I
read to you the net rankings of the teams they beat, it's not a surprise they're 7-3.
And on top of that, their roster isn't horrible.
Right.
They've brought in some good players.
Yes, they have.
Terrell Brown Jr., Dejon Davis, Emmett Matthews. These are all starting caliber players for good programs around the country.
That's right.
Power 5 programs around the country. They never should have been as bad as they were in the first place earlier in the year. So let's do this. We got big news with the Seahawks to discuss. Looks like they might have a new defensive coordinator. We'll get to a little fun with audio / hey, did you hear that? Which includes a NHL owner making an absolute ass out of himself, by the way. We're always fans of that. And then Hugh Millen is going to join us coming up at 5:05 tonight.
What's that, Dick?
And talk about all the big news around the NFL and the Hawks right here on 950 KJR.